The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So are we ready? There? Okay. So, what I have in mind today is a little bit of a participatory Dharma talk. You're going to help me with it. And I'm going to tell you a story. And then there are two points in the story where I'll need some help. And I'll ask you. It's a fairy tale. And it's a fairy tale about, it's the kind of a sequel story to many of those stories where the princess meets Prince Charming. What happens afterwards? Kind of. And, in this story, it's the monarchs of the two kingdoms who have arranged a marriage between the princess of one country and the Prince Charming of the other. And everyone's so happy for them because he's Prince Charming, after all. And so the wedding date is set, and the wedding day comes, and she puts on her beautiful wedding dress, and the kingdom, the queendom, is quite happy about what's happening, except for the princess. Princess actually doesn't want to marry Prince Charming. Actually doesn't find him that charming after all. And it's an arranged marriage, so you know she doesn't want to do this, but she feels like, well, what does she do? You know, that's the way it's done for generations, and she's expected to follow in the footsteps of how things are done. So she decides, she remembers that on the edge of town in the woods, there lives a wise woman, an elder, who has been known as someone who is filled with love, and that just to sit in her presence and see in her eyes, it's just like you feel so loved, so accepted, that everything falls away and just seems like everything is good. And from time to time, she'll give advice, and her advice is always great. So she finds her way into the woods, and it takes a while in the woods to get lost, and she finds her way and in her wedding dress and finds her way to this one-room cabin where this wise woman lives. And she gets invited in, and she sits down, and sure enough, she immediately feels this warmth and this kindness come from this woman who seems to look at her as if she's a long-lost relative and so happy to see her. And so the princess tells her story and tells her about the wedding and how she doesn't want to get married and, you know, asks the wise woman what she could do. And the wise woman pauses for a long time and maybe reflective, taking in the princess, holding her in her care and her kindness and support. And it makes a huge difference to sit there and receive this. And then she lifts up her hand, her finger, and says, I know what you need. She said, take off your wedding dress. Now this is a little bit challenging for, you know, someone raised in royalty because it's not very dignified to stand there in your underwear. But there's something about the wise woman that's like, you know, well, I guess I have to do this. So she takes off the wedding dress. But instead of standing there in her underwear, she's now standing there in a nurse's outfit. And it's all the times where she felt that she was responsible for everyone. She had to take care of everyone. Everyone else she had to help and support and care for and be responsible for. And she was kind of surprised to see this, and then she looked up at the wise woman, and the wise woman said, take that off too. And underneath there was leather jackets and tattoos and nose rings and rebellion of all sorts against everything that a princess could rebel against. She looked up at the wise woman and who said, "Take it off." And she took it off, and as she took these things off, she could feel herself getting lighter. There was less heaviness. And it seemed lighter and more expansive and open and felt a little kind of relaxed in a different way than she ever felt before. And she took off the leather jacket and stuff. There, underneath it came what appeared now was a 7-year-old school outfit, perfectly ironed. And this was how she always wanted to be the good girl and do everything right for the parents. And be just there, you know, proper and do things, be the good girl. And of course, the wise elder said, "Take it off." And this is where you come in. When she took off that school uniform, what was the next, what did you find next? What was the next thing she was wearing that had to come off? A monk's robe, says the monk. You know about that. So the spiritual garb, all the spiritual garb and spiritual life that she was so caught up in and attached to and had so much hope and expectation, she had the most beautiful monk's robe. She was a princess. Take it off. What came next? Yes?
A carpenter's outfit?
A carpenter's outfit. A repair person's, a handy person. Uh-huh. And what did that represent? The one who could fix everything. Fix it and just fix everything and probably try to fix you too. Great. Take it off. Yes?
A hospital gown.
Oh, poor me. It's so hard. I'm so sick. I'm a victim. All these people did this to me, and I'll never get well. And, you know, this is, you know, poor. You should feel sorry for me. So what does the wise elder say? Take it off. And one story, one version of the story was she takes it off, and it's kind of like that, I guess, but she's just wrapped full of gauze and band-aids and, you know, medical repair. Take it off. So what else?
A beggar's outfit.
A beggar's outfit. Another poor me kind of.
But like coming from lack. It's
a tremendous sense of lack. She's the princess, but she feels like she doesn't have enough. I knew someone once who was a psychologist for wealthy people who felt they didn't have enough money. And one of his most wealthy clients had, back then, 20 years ago, $40 million and felt they didn't have enough. So a lack. So yeah, so what's the uniform for a lack?
Yeah.
Almost nothing, just threads. So then take it off. And what else? The clown. What does that represent?
Trying to entertain and impress.
Entertain and impress everyone and put on a show and get everyone to like you. Take it off. Yes?
Academic robe.
Academic robe, where you wouldn't, like a judge's gown or some graduation gown, and you know everything, and stately and wise, like the owl, and ready to tell everyone everything you know. Take it off. Yes?
I don't know if they had it back in the time of the princess, but those
gliding suits, body suits, where you jump off the cliff?
Yeah. No. Better keep that on until you land. At least until you land. And what does that represent?
Thrill-seeking.
Thrill-seeking.
Wanting to live like maximum.
And pretend you'll never die.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Take it off. Yes?
A judge's robe.
Judge's robe. I think we all know what that is. Take it off.
Shackles.
Say a little bit more, please.
Well, like she feels like she's trapped to the traditional way of life that her parents and their parents
don't raise. So she lived inside her ideas of being trapped and shackled. Nice. So take it off. So it kept going this way for a while, and it turned out she had a lot of roles, a lot of personas that she had been living in and working with over her lifetime, and she didn't even know they were there. And with the help of the wise woman, she started taking them off. At one point, she took one off, and then instead of there being another uniform, another set of clothes, a fire welled up. She couldn't tell if it was around her or in her. It was everywhere. Just a huge, hot, red, glowing fire. Everything was fire. And so she sat there in the fire. And as she sat there, she watched. And she watched that all her shame fell into the fire and burned. All her conceit fell into the fire and burned up. All her fear of rejection fell into the fire, burned up. So this is your cue. What else needs to burn? What do you sit and burn? And what else needs to fall into the fire and really burn up? Addictions, they fall in, they can burn.
Attachments
of anything in particular?
The way things have to be.
Get a little louder, please.
The way things have
to be. The attachment to the way things have to be burned up. What are the psychological states? Have to go through the fire to burn up.
Doubt.
Greed.
Self-judgment.
It sizzles when it goes in the fire.
Fear.
So as these things started to burn up, the fire started to get less red and less hot, became yellow and cooler. That seems to be the direction it's going, so what else had to go into it?
Anger.
That should have been a little earlier. But yes, finally the anger. That's maybe hard to get let go of. So finally the anger burns up, burns in its own heat. Fear.
Uncertainty.
Sorry?
Uncertainty.
Uncertainty. Okay, the fear, uncertainty, doubt, not knowing. That's can be a very strong hindrance for people to live in this mindset of feeling uncertain. Yes?
Resentment.
Burn, please.
Romantic obsession.
Happens occasionally. Romantic obsessions. I see, Brian?
Coldness.
Coldness, like you mean aloof.
Cold attachments.
Cold attachment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a burn. Yes?
Her aversion towards Prince Charming.
Oh, yes. That's the burn too, yes. Still doesn't have to get married, though. No more aversion. So as all these things fell into the fire, then it kept getting cooler and cooler until it became bluer and bluer, blue, cool fire. And then it transformed from fire into water, a fount of water flowing by her, through her. And the water got clearer and clearer until finally it was just this beautiful, beautiful blue, blue water, clear water. And then the water started to settle and fall down onto the floor in a puddle. And in the puddle, in the cracks of the wood, the floor, the water fell through and disappeared. And she kind of like suddenly was there without the fire and the water. And she looked around, and the wise woman was gone. And she looked around, then she noticed that the shawl, the blue shawl that the wise woman was wearing, was now around her shoulders. And then she looked over at the table, and there was a little card on the table that said, "Dear Princess, welcome home." And so she took up residence in that little house. And over the years, people would say, "There's this wise woman who lives there on the edge of the edge of the town in the forest. And if you go there, she has all this love, and she'll love you and accept you and hold you and just be with you. She doesn't seem to want anything from you. And from time to time, she'll give you advice." So that's one way of talking about what happens when you practice mindfulness. If you really practice it, if you really engage in it in a strong, deep way, and really kind of are honest and see what's really happening here for you, you will start taking off the personas, the roles, the clothes, all these things that are not you, that you've been learned from society, from your world, from your family, from all kinds of things. All these things that have a time and place, they might be useful in some situations, but to become it, to be it, is a burden. And if you really do the mindfulness practice well, you'll start shedding them. They'll fall off. You'll take off all that. And some people, when they practice mindfulness strongly, will actually feel quite naked. They'll feel quite raw, exposed, because so much of the usual mindsets that hold us and that we clothe ourselves in no longer is there. And there's a lot of uncertainty, a lot of not knowing, because if you don't have all that, then who are you? But then if you really are honest and really sit in the middle of yourself and really are in the... This takes being in the present moment. To really be here, really here for yourself. To really experience the mindsets, really experience the heart sets, really experience all the different movements that are happening inside. And to be present for them intimately and clearly and honestly, they start to burn. There's a burning, a sizzling, dissolving, another shedding that happens. And it all has to fall in. It all has to fall away. Anything that resembles an attachment, a holding, a clinging to something in the mind. And the fire that we sit in, sometimes the fire is quite intense for people. It's quite something to, you know, go on a meditation retreat where it's so peaceful. You know, and everyone's kind and no one's talking and it's usually a beautiful place and nice. And you're in, you know, everyone else is peaceful, but you're burning. Burned. You know, all this stuff of who we are shows up. they call it a purification process. And then it gets cooler, bluer. And eventually even the water that baptizes us, the water that purifies us, falls away, disappears. And there's a kind of a renewal of being, or a new world that we live in, or a new understanding of what it means to be at home, or to be settled, or to be at peace. And if you're lucky enough to taste that, then the next task is to live from that, to learn how to be that and live that, how to make it your kind of your home. And you'll know you're doing it if you begin loving the people you see. You don't have to like them, but you need to have some kind of love for them, some kind of ability, kind regard, some caring regard, some appreciation and valuing of people. And maybe you don't have that sparkly eyes that the wise woman had, that you just feel so loving and accepted. That doesn't matter, because you don't care anymore. It doesn't matter what you have and don't have. It just matters that you're free and you're here. And you really know, you'll know if you are, if you slow down enough to begin taking in the people of the world, the times you're in, the situation you're in. You're really there to live it and be in it. Because the home is not in the woods. The home is everywhere and anywhere you go. But if you can stay in it, and most people don't stay home. Most people will rush off to the next thing and important thing and their preoccupation, and there's so many things to do and attain and worry about. But to find a home wherever you are. So that's the fairy tales at IMC. And it'd be nice to believe it's your fairy tale. I hope you live it. So any comments, questions, anything else you'd like to say about that or offer? Or if you could wait for the mic, please.
Sorry.
The mic is coming.
My name is Mary. I enjoyed the story.
My name is Mary. I enjoyed the story. And I know I'll reflect on it.
Sorry?
I'll reflect on it in the future in a helpful way, but I'm curious about the prince and the kingdoms, the rest of the story.
Oh, I see. You know, I think that sequel hasn't been made yet. How should it go? Do you have any idea of how that one should go?
I'm parents and the prince could wander by another time. The other story's there.
Ah, and get the benefit of all that love and care and take off some of their clothes too. Yeah, that would be nice.
That story kind of reminded me of another one you've told before about an arranged marriage and a princess who was in love with a sort of childhood, someone she grew up with that was...
The Chinese story.
The Chinese story, yeah. And, no, there's not time for another story. But what I thought was interesting about that one was that it was sort of that the princess was split And there was a sort of ideal version of herself, or I don't know exactly, but that there was a sort of split between something that could have been, and it was kind of like neither. I guess one of the ways of seeing it was that neither of them was really her.
She got separated. She wanted to marry her childhood sweetheart, and her parents had arranged marriage with someone else. And so, what you find out after a while is that there became two of her, and one ran away with her childhood sweetheart and went off and had kids, and the other one stayed home and was sick and was bedridden for decades, or a long time.
I guess the question was, I felt in that one that instead of sort of taking off these layers, there was a way, it just seemed like it was sort of provoking us to think about, you know, which one was the real
her.
And
So in this story, it's a kind of used in Zen practice, at some point these two versions of her, they meet. And when they meet, they join together. And then the question is, which one of them was the real one?
Mm-hmm. So I guess the question that what I was wondering about was, you know, how is that a useful way to also think about meditation, of a kind of not splitting off any part of yourself,
absolutely,
but everything?
It's very useful. There's plenty of, not everyone, but there's plenty of people who have split off parts of themselves. And sometimes there are two different sides of a person at war. And one side can't accept the other side, and they're really at odds. And that becomes clear. This is one of the advantages of meditation sometimes. If you sit quiet enough and still enough, it isn't just a matter of becoming still. It's a matter of becoming quiet enough to see what's really going on. And sometimes the war. And meditation in that sense is bringing the war to an end. Healing the divides that we exist in.
Thank you.
There's many metaphors for the different things that happen in spiritual practice, but these are some of them tonight.
Yes,
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the story very much, but for some reason my mind went to the nurse's uniform. And sometime, let's say 20 years earlier, she either was a nurse or behaved as a nurse. Back 20 years earlier, was being a nurse beneficial? Was she wasting her time? Was she creating bad karma? You know, I certainly am creating new roles for myself right now. And yes, someday I'm going to have to get rid of them. And maybe I have to do that now. But what about the roles that seem like they're beneficial either to humanity or to me right now?
I think it's a good.
How do I deal with them?
Well, before you asked the question, I was going to go somewhere else. But with that question, I'll say, don't be attached to them. Where I was going to go was that, if you're going to live a human life, you'll have roles, all kinds of roles. But as we become freer, we can move in and out of the roles with ease. And we're not attached to a particular role. And we can pick them up, do them when they're useful and meaningful, and put them down when they're not. The issue is that many people get attached to their roles. And there's attachments for it, attachments against it, all kinds of hold on to it. We don't want to put it down. We carry it with us when it's no longer needed, or we refuse to pick it up when it is needed. It's kind of complicated, all this. And so with freedom, we can we pick it up and put it down as needed. So maybe someone here is a nurse, and if a member here, we've had people here have medical emergencies right here, and then the people who are medical people, we're glad for that. That they weren't planning to be a nurse or a doctor this evening, but they step up into that and help with the situation. And then maybe they put it down and they go home, when it's over. And And last week I was a, I don't know much of an identity or role. I was outside the treehouse where I was staying at the retreat center we have. It's a curve in the road, and there was a one-car accident. No one got hurt, but it was a pretty dramatic accident. And at night, and so I was the helper, and I stayed and helped until I was no longer needed, and then I was no longer the helper. Then I tried to be the sleeper, but I didn't succeed very well for quite a while. There was a lot of energy. So anything else? Anything you would like to bring up or ask? Or yes, please. If you could use the mic, please.
How do you decipher what's a story and what's real?
Say again.
How do you tell the difference between a story and what's real?
How do you tell the difference between a story and what's real? I probably don't have a good answer for you, but I think in my mind, stories are never real. If it's a story, it's not real. It might resemble reality, what's real. It might be a pointer to what's real. It might be useful to kind of explain things well enough to get the work done. But a story is always going to be a concept, an idea. It's always a step removed from the direct experience of the moment.
But I feel like our lives are all made up of so many stories.
It is.
And we season them so well over time that they become so real to the point you don't know the difference.
I think it's like these roles. I think our life is stories, lots of stories. We can't not have stories. But it really helps to see it as a story, to see it being born as a story, as opposed to thinking this is real, this is actually what's happening. There's a way of participating in the story and being creative with it and learning to be creative and wise and use them in useful ways, use them in ways that heal, that liberate, that are compassionate. There's all kinds of ways to use the stories. And so what's important is not so much the stories, but rather what we're connected to when we live the stories. Are we connected to compassion? Are we connected to freedom? Are we connected to wisdom, to insight? Can we really see what's happening clearly? And that's what's important. And then with those as kind of like the perspectives for the story, then we can step into stories. Because society asks us to participate in stories. Or we can recognize that society is asking us to participate in stories which are awful and that we shouldn't participate in them. Because we know this is someone else's story and it's not real how society is organized. It's not the truth. So I think that becoming wise about the storytelling mind and story, is very, very helpful. But the idea that we're not going to live without any stories is not useful. It's like saying, that's almost the same as saying, I'm going to live without any language. Stories are the way, stories are kind of the how we communicate. And then there's some scholars of religion say that the primary thing religion is stories. And most people are oriented around, not about the core beliefs of this religion, the tenets, but what really grabs them and orients them is the stories that religion tell. And tonight you got a story. And it was real. That one was real, metaphorically. Yes? Can you wait for the mic, please?
Yeah. Instead of answering, how can you tell what's reality and what's a story?
Yeah.
In Buddhism, is there such a thing as reality? What is reality?
That's a good question, too. I think that Buddhism is not so interested in what reality is, but is really interested in freedom and compassion. And so the thing that Buddhism is focusing on is how to have insight, understanding, into that which is, if you insist on using the word real, that which is real in terms of causing suffering or freedom from suffering. So you want to, that's what you want to see. And the rest of it is hopefully what we live wisely. We live wisely with the rest of it. And what reality is, you know, I don't know how much it matters once you're free. I mean, it matters a little bit. You have to go find the gas station, and that's a nice story we tell ourselves. You know, down the street, there's a gas station, hole in the ground with gas. And if you pay a certain amount of money, you can fill up your tank. So that's, is that real? It's, you know, I don't know. Yes, no, who knows? Who cares? I just need to get gas. I know, is that satisfying enough, my answer?
It's a perfect answer.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, so so I hope you enjoyed, or hope it, that this fairy tale I told you was something you could relate to enough to use it as a mirror for yourself, and to look at yourself and to understand the tremendous value of taking off some of these clothes and allowing some things to burn in the fire of mindfulness. So thank you all.